Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, friends. This is Nick, and I'm here with my co-host, Terry, and this is Hell No, the radio show. Hell No, the radio show is a socially conscious water cooler talk show about what's going on in the world as we feature guests and callers who express their thoughts. Hell No is friendly, it's funny, it's real, and it's focused on empowering the truth. What we do is we give a voice to people who feel left in the dust. This program, however, is not democratic, it's not fascist, and it's not a place for sacred cows. We do advocate for peace, critical thought, education, reading, and social awareness. So go ahead and write this telephone number down and give me and Terry a thought to share your, to share your thoughts on our discussions during topics on tonight's Hell No episode. That number is area code 718-508-9419. Then when you're prompted, dial option number 1. The telephone number again is area code 718-508-9419. Hell No is a one-hour show, and we take your calls in the order you receive them, so please sit tight. Of course, we can receive emails anytime at hellnoradioshow@gmail.com, where you can get in touch with us and let us know your thoughts on topics and speakers and guests and all that. Also, please check out our Facebook page where you can find all of our episodes, facebook.com/hellnotheradioshow, and follow us on Twitter at Hell No Radio Show. Partial support for Hell No, the radio show comes from our loyal sponsors, and Terry's going to tell us about them now.
Our longtime and wonderful sponsor, Ms. Jane Flint, body worker and massage therapist extraordinaire. She's located at 10335 West Oklahoma Avenue in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. As I'm often heard to say, if you're within a 100-mile radius, it's worth the drive. She is as good as they get, folks. She is a wonderful massage therapist. And just because it's 4th of July and she's feeling very, very ambivalent toward everyone, guess what? $10 off your first appointment if you mention our radio show. Phone number there is 414-321-9030. That's 414-321-9030. Once again, Jane Flint, massage therapist, body worker extraordinaire. She is trained in over 15 different disciplines of massage, body work, and stretching, activated stretching. She is one of the very few people who is accredited in the teams that they use on the Olympic athletes. So once again, you can reach her at 414-321-9030. Well, Nick, what a week it's been.
The week has been foggy for me because of allergies. I don't know about you, but you complain about a bad throat. I'm right there with you.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on for me. This has really been bugging me all day today. My throat has been giving me problems, so I apologize to our audience in advance if I don't sound quite up to snuff. Let's tackle a few things right off the bat. What do we want to do first? Your choice.
What about, one moment here.
Come on, there's going to be a quiz on this if you don't hurry up.
I know. You know what? Let's handle some of the stuff we had on last week. We had a couple things that we had on our hit parade that we didn't touch on. Unemployment. I want to hear, because one of the things you told me was that unemployment compensation and the whole world of unemployment, you found it to be somewhat of a scam. What do you mean by that?
It really has become a scam. And I'm dealing with a situation right now with a couple of former employees, and the situation is that these employees were fired for very serious causes, and those causes included fraud, theft, and a few other things, and they were granted unemployment. I mean, I was astounded, and It's incredible to me that we are paying people out of the money that we have to accrue, set aside, pay out every year, and leave in a huge kitty. I would like to be getting the interest off of that, by the way. All sorts of evidence in showing that the individuals were doing what they did, and it didn't matter. The woman who worked for the state didn't care. She just said, well, because he didn't know his job was in jeopardy, or she didn't know her job was in jeopardy, then we're giving him unemployment. What? When you catch somebody red-handed? I don't know. It's amazing
to
see what's going on.
Wisconsin
is a joke when it comes to that, among other things. But it's become that way in so many places where, you know, the standard or so-called standard is just ridiculous. And I chose to fight it, to appeal it. And then, you know, that means getting a lawyer at $250 an hour. So no matter what, you still lose. It becomes a matter of principle that I'm not going to pay someone who was an incredibly destructive force within my company if I can get into a situation where I don't have to pay that person. I'm appalled at that. I'm absolutely appalled at that.
You know, Terry,
years ago, that person would have been tied to a tree somewhere outside of town, as an example.
People
would be throwing rotten fruit at him.
There is some truth to that. It really is, though, a state-by-state thing, and it seems to go administration by administration sometimes. You different – here in Texas, for example, the Department of Unemployment Security, or I think that's what they're called. I mean, they are run like oh, my goodness. I don't know. Like, I would say like NASA, but I don't know if that's a good – and we'll see what happened with NASA. That didn't really stick around. That's another story. But, you know, it's run really well, like a tight ship in one place where they've got it standardized and know this and that. But other states, I mean, I've heard similar things from people in Wisconsin. And what I've heard about their unemployment system particularly is that there are so many people who work in seasonal construction that there's an expectation that they'll be laid off at the end of every construction season, and throughout the winter months, they're almost guaranteed to get unemployment compensation. And I always just thought that was kind of an interesting thing, why people didn't pick up a winter job. You know, why don't you go work at the mall wrapping presents or something, do something like that. But that's tough.
Take advantage of the situation to the nth degree. And again, in other countries, when people have seasonal jobs, they do different things in the winter. In China, if you're a farmer, in the wintertime, you're probably a furniture maker or a wood carver.
Right.
Or
right.
Someone
this
who
goes back to personal ethics. This is we'll revisit a topic we had before, personal ethics. If your personal ethics are one where if you find out that you get laid off from your construction job, for example, and you can realize that you can call into the state system and get some free cash, why would you get off your butt and work? Maybe if you can get the free handout, and that may be one person's personal ethics. The other person has maybe personal ethics of I will pick up this other job. And I just know that it's just I don't want to continue using Texas as an example for everything. I mean, we're far from the perfect place. I mean, look at our education's in the toilet. But, you know, as far as people getting work and doing work, I know so many folks that they'll have one job and then their second job and then they're in their garage, you know, making woodworking things or metal things for trade days or one of the flea markets, and they're selling stuff. Like never stop working people. Get a bunch of different jobs. And it's so funny because sometimes wonder how Mr. Construction Man lives in, you know, what looks like a mansion to most people. It's because the man works his butt off. And that's a matter of personal ethics. And the people who you're talking about who are on the unemployment system who sit there and milk it for what they're worth, you know, I don't think that they're out building birdhouses on the side. They're probably sitting at home sucking back beers on the couch. I could be wrong, and I don't want to condemn anyone because those are some of the people, you know, that, you know, you or I or anyone might know or grew up with. But it's just a matter of personal ethics, and that's all I'm going to say about that.
Okay. Well, moving rapidly onward, we'll touch on another subject called commonly the law of attraction. And the law of attraction, simply stated, is that if you think about or act in a particular manner, you will attract similar. That's an oversimplification, but that's the basis for it. If you think happy thoughts and generous thoughts, you will allegedly garner some of the same in your life. There are people who teach this. There are people one of the more popular things that was done a few years ago was video and book called The Secret. And it's just a rehash of the law of attraction theory, if you want to term it a theory. There are people who try to link it with quantum mechanics. I think that's a stretch. But all in all, the whole idea behind it is if you can visualize it and you continue to dwell on it and you act as though you want it or already have it, that you will in fact attract this into your life. Now, is there any truth to any of this? Well, there seems to be some truth to it. And likely it's not anything woo-woo or new age as much as change your framework of who you are and what you are and what you do when you get into a different mindset. People respond to you differently. Things respond to you differently. There may, in fact, be a legitimate side to this whole thing. As far as I'm concerned, you know, the jury is still out on it, but it's probably a situation where if it works, it's likely not what they say it is, or exactly what they say it is. And you know, they kind of pull this over into a quasi-religious situation, or you know, you consider the universe your feedback, so to speak, and or your catalog, and you can ask it for whatever you want. If you're sincere and you're asking, and you ask with the belief that you are going to receive it or have already received it, that this is going to happen or that it's going to go for you. So it would be interesting to hear from our listeners if any of them have had any experience with that. But something that's just kind of fun to bring up on the show. And at the very least, it'll get you thinking a little more positively and feeling a little better with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing wrong with that, especially in this day and age when it's really easy to get depressed the moment that you open your eyes, as evidenced by the number of antidepressants that I've described on a very regular basis. What are your thoughts?
Absolutely, and we will take a caller in a second, but my thoughts are this. I think someone in my family gave me that book, The Secret, which is all the laws of attraction. I also have known people tie it to quantum mechanics and quantum physics and study that and how the entanglement of particles and everything, which is another thing. I've heard people say that, you know, all this is really is, again, like you said, a quasi-religious thing, believing that instead of saying the universe, maybe it's God, maybe God is the universe, and that whole line of thought. And so, you know, I say this, the practicing positivity with the laws of attraction, to me, also feels and seems and acts similar to prayer. Moving on from that, there's people I've known who say the laws of attraction only work positively, that if you are thinking about success, 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 you will attract success. But when you say, I don't want to fail, I don't want to fail, I don't want to fail, that you might fail because the laws of attraction don't work with the not in front of it, the negated statement.
Yeah, well,
the counterpositive.
More clearly,
would that be a counterpositive?
More clearly, I think, is that the primary is what goes out according to their theory.
All right.
The primary being fail.
Right. Exactly. There you go. There's a good way to explain.
And
so
you know, even though you may be thinking that it's otherwise, if you're using a primary, which is a negative, that allegedly you're just attracting more, and supposedly the universe only hears fail, 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 no matter which way you do it.
Right, right. Do you know people who seem to get up on the wrong side of the bed every single day? My dad was one of these people, and I just, you know, there's times that I said, the man is wound up so tight, it is no surprise to me that negative things happen to him because he brings them to him. He's attracting all this negativity. And the people I know who, you know, some people will say, well, they don't have God in their lives. You know, that's one way you might look at it. But there's also these same people that they say that about. I look at some of these people and I say they are fit to be tied. No matter what happens, they're going to find a problem with it. And it's like the Debbie Downers of the world. And they're so focused and especially with medical conditions. How they say people make themselves sick by thinking about being sick so much that they end up being sick. And when you just put in your head all these positive things and work towards it and be a happy little Pollyanna running towards the sunshine, things seem to work out for you. And, you know, people say, you know, those pretty people in the world where everything just works out and they're just in a good mood. Maybe they're just practicing the laws of attraction correctly, you know, and everybody else is just doing it wrong. But anyhow,
yeah,
let's pick out.
They sure aren't hurting anybody. And I'm going to throw one little example in here. There's a deli that I go to every once in a while, and there's a very attractive middle-aged woman who's in there almost every time I've gone in there. She's always got a book, and she's always smiling while she reads. And she'll look up at you, and she always smiles. And, you know, she's one of these people who seems to be fundamentally happy. She's in great shape. She's looking good. And it would be interesting to know her story. One of these days, if I ever get up in the guts, I'll ask her. But she's a good example of what we're talking about.
You know, you might sit down with her and walk away with 500 new show topics. Let's take a caller. Here's our caller whose telephone number is 6838, and this caller just seems to have us penned right into her schedule now, so we like that.
Oh, this is wonderful. Can you hear me okay?
No,
ma'am.
We can't hear you at all, actually, and I didn't hear what you just said about hearing you okay.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Just messing with you. Just messing with you.
Oh, thank you.
No, you're welcome. We'll mess with anybody.
Never a dull moment with you, Terry.
In responding to the laws of attraction, I think that people or individuals certainly, I don't want to get caught up in the mysticism that people ascribe to the law of attraction. What I do think the significant value is for the individual who practices law of attraction is that, first of all, that individual has fundamentally made a commitment with intention to make a change in themselves. And hey, fundamentally, that's where the change must occur. So the first rule of attraction happens when the individual actually takes self-responsibility on and says, I need to change the way I'm thinking. What communication am I placing out there? From there, with that
fundamental.
Thank you. Fundamental change. I think the individual then begins to explore the natural progression from there is, what do you say to yourself about yourself? The longest conversation we will ever have in our lives is the one we have in our head that began when we became somewhat cognitive and verbal, and we began to write the movie of our lives in our head. And I think the law of attraction gives the individual some tools and empowerment so that they can begin to look at those negative self statements that they perhaps make that comes across as, I don't want to lose. Okay, the better statement is, I'm going to win. I don't want to lose means I feel like I'm a loser. You know, I'm going to win has a much more powerful impact. So I think, again, you have a cognitive change in the individual's thinking. And I'll kind of be quiet and open it up there.
I agree and have heard that the weight to the extent you can give, now this may be back into the physics, but the extent mm-hmm. that you could give weight to the statements, that the positive statements are I don't know how much more, but significantly heavier and have significantly more power than the negative statements.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think a good example would be perhaps again, in terms of what you put out there on display attracts something, okay? Again, I'm going to try to remove a little bit of mysticism from that. But in a disagreement, if I say, well, you know, that just pisses me off, I'm going to get a reaction from that. If I say, help me understand your choice in that method, and perhaps I say it in an even nicer tone than that, what I get back from that individual is going to mirror the way I have approached that individual. Now, again, mm-hmm. you know, I'm not talking about a highly volatile situation. I'm talking about a, you know, a regular disagreement. And so I think it does empower the individual with a set of tools and a set of self-awareness tools to help them transition and have measurable, viewable, positive outcomes from what they are doing. They have made a change, and they're seeing a change in their interactions. And then I know individuals take that further and do meditation and other things. And I don't necessarily think that that it has to be spiritual or it has to be religious. I think sometimes it's good for just cleaning out your head, and it's good practice for other people. Other people don't like it, but that's a time really set aside for that self-exploration.
Well, I kind of like using one of those round wire brushes for cleaning out my head, but I don't know. I like getting it really clean, you know. Those stainless steel bristles, they have that effect. They get me going.
You know, well, if you practice and, like, shift, it's like an attitude. It's a paradigm shift, if you will, to focus on being positive. And when you do that, just the, again, having people respond positively to you, you'll benefit from that, and you'll just be in a better mood, if nothing else. And maybe by being a better mood, you'll make better decisions. You'll work a little bit better and more efficiently. Maybe you'll be nice to someone, and maybe you'll just put yourself in that situation where all these other things are there to happen. But I like the statement that the universe is plentiful and everything that we need is available to us in the universe. We just have to be open to receive it. And maybe being open to receive it is being positive, because it just works. I just really like it all. I think it's good stuff.
Well, I just have one question. Paradigm, that would be 20 cents, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. Triple word score, possibly, on Scrabble.
Thank you. Anyhow, rapidly onward. I spoke to a lady today who was agoraphobic, and I was talking to her about some of the things that had transpired in her life, and she said how incredibly important animals were in bringing her out and making it possible for her to get out of her house and among people, and I thought we would touch on that one more time. We touched on it a little bit with regard to autism, putting my accent in the wrong place. But we really have never talked about people who are agoraphobes. And I know that our caller has some background in psychology. So maybe she'll pitch in on this. And what we aren't going to do is tell her that we've got a secret prize for her if she pitches in just right. Just like on the old Arthur Godfrey show. Never mind, neither of you are old enough to remember that.
I'll pitch in.
Okay. So
let's define agoraphobia for individuals. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. I thought you were asking me to do it. I was going to pitch right in.
I'll jump right in. Agoraphobia would be a situation where an individual has a decidedly need to feel safe and secure. A lot of people talk about it in terms of fear of leaving their homes or being in a certain place. It's not necessarily the fear of being away from home. It is the loss of security when they're not in a secured place. Animals.
Well, oh. Yeah. I have a lady who's agoraphobic who works for me and has worked for me for most of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And she is severely agoraphobic. I mean, severely
mm-hmm.
so. And it was brought on by the loss of her boyfriend in the Vietnam War.
Mm-hmm.
And getting her out of the house for any reason is, you know, a crowbar, 3 pound
mm-hmm.
shoes, and a burlap bag.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very difficult. And I, you know, I've gotten her in to see some of the very best people, and she's made a little bit of headway here and there, but she always backslides. And part of the problem is she believes somehow, some way, that her boyfriend is still alive somewhere, which is...
Well,
you know,
we get
very,
into some into some issues of secondary gain, and that's another topic. But
yep.
you know, let's staying focused here. As we talk about individuals who have severe anxiety, and when I talk about severe anxiety, I'm not talking about a simple oh my gosh, you know, there's a why there's a deer crossing the road, and you know I have to hit the brakes or don't hit the brakes, whatever. This is deeper than that. For these individuals, they actually feel like they are about to die, that something imminently bad and fatalistic is going to happen. It is tremendously incapacitating for an individual. Pets not only help the individual to feel more secured, there is an attachment. Attachment is essential in helping an agoraphobic develop a need to get out of the house that is not about themselves. And one thing about animals, particularly dogs, they are very purposeful with anxiety disorders, as you have to take your dog out for a walk, get some fresh air. So then good pet care, it places that individual in a sense of, I have some power here. I have some control in that this animal needs me to do this. And, of course, again, the development of the relationship with the animal. And then I'll kind of stop and see where you want to go from there.
Yep. Well, the lady who works for me, and as I said, she's
mm-hmm.
very severely agoraphobic. Her aunt and probably just myself and one other person are the only people who can get her to go out of the house. And we have to stay with her at all times. Taking her to a crowded shopping area or mall is like throwing her into hell. And it's really a sad thing. Now, when she's with animals, both the ladies I'm talking about work with animals. When she's with the animals, she's supremely confident, and she works with some very large animals. She works with many venomous animals and doesn't blink an eye, doesn't affect her in the very least. But put her into a shopping center, and she comes apart at the seams. This other gal that I was talking to today is not anywhere near as severe, but she credits her dog and a very large lizard that she has as the things that helped her relate to the rest of the world and, in fact, brought her out, so to speak. And once again, it puts us in a situation where you have to start thinking about man's relationship with animals, how important it is, and how important it is to recognize that we need that relationship on many, many levels. And the whack jobs and nutballs from these animal rights groups are doing everything they can to pry human beings away from their natural inclinations, to pry us away from our relationships with animals, the various relationships that we have, and screw it up. And they're doing a remarkably good job. You know, if 50 whales died tomorrow because they released them back into the ocean, they would find another reason that the whales died. It's really sad. It is truly sad. Humans have to have a relationship with many, many, many animals. Interestingly, I just read something that was handed out at a nutrition lecture, and it was done by a very well-spoken and very knowledgeable nutritionist, not one of the hospital, you know, green jello and Coca-Cola nutritionists. This was an individual who really knew what he was talking about. And one of the things that he said on there, it was sort of a synopsis, is that unless we have a diet that contains some animal protein, it's almost impossible for us to get the nutrients that we need, or all the nutrients that we need. And that's very true. You know, we are omnivores tending toward carnivores. Our ancestors ate a lot of meat, a lot more than we thought they did. As time goes on, we learn more about Cro-Magnon and Homo erectus and the Neanderthals. We're finding out that they ate an awful lot of meat. They were very, very much into eating meat, what they did. And nothing to do with that. Let's bring in the Jefferson airplane for our
actually,
music.
I was able to do it. I overcame the technology.
Okay, never mind. We are going to have a treat. We're going to go and listen to Do Ya by The Move. An incredible song, a wonderful song from the late 60s. Go for it.
Thanks.
lost the ending. Oh, Nick. Nick?
Oh, there you go.
Here.
Sorry,
you,
I was on the mute
are you
button.
There?
I'm great.
You lost
I just,
the ending.
I faded it out intentionally.
You faded
I'm
out
sorry
before.
If I killed it.
Yeah, you killed it before.
Premature
you know,
fade out.
I may force you to play that one more time because the ending is really dramatic. The last thing they say is, "Look out, baby! There's a planet coming at you."
Oh.
It's an amazing song. It is. It's if you listen to the lyrics, if you listen to the music, if you know anything about music, that's one of the best damn songs that was ever written. It's an incredible song, done by The Move. That group, normally I tell you who the members were and I give you info like that. What I'll do with The Move, because we are of limited time here, is tell you that they later became known as the Electric Light Orchestra, and there were some personnel changes, and then it was shortened to ELO. They did another version of this same song, but it was nowhere near as powerful as the original. It was sort of glossed up a little bit, but it did not have anywhere near the power of the original song. That song stands on its own as one of the most unusual and powerful songs done in that entire era. And if you get a chance to listen to it over good speakers, crank it up and listen. I used to use the very ending of the song at lectures that I would do on conservation. And I had a short video of one of the missions, one of the space missions, coming back to Earth so that the planet is zooming up at you. And we would run that concurrent with them saying, "Look out, baby, there's a planet coming at you." And the song has a lot of different meanings, a lot of different things that they wove into it. It's a hell of a song. So, enough. But maybe at the very end, we're going to do it again. I don't know.
I'm excited about that. I will never, you know, here I'm sitting here thinking, oh, I should probably fade this out.
Sounds like a good stop time. And then I had my mute button on my phone because I was trying to not be obnoxious, but anyways, you know, sometimes I just should be like fired from
so
the sound booth. My goodness. Hey, we got another buddy on the line who wants to say hi, whose telephone number ends in the year before I was born. How's that as a clue? All right, I'll just tell y'all what it is.
Oh, never mind.
No, 1974. I was born in 1975, but caller who's ending in 1974, you raised your hand to say hello. You're on the air. Hell No, the radio show. Enter at your own mercy.
Well, it's good to hear everybody, and I was on last week, so I'm sure you're semi-familiar with who I am now. But
yes,
interesting conversation.
We forgot all about you.
and they can't hear me.
To us whatsoever. It's just terrible. We forget about everyone. We just talk over them, we ignore them. I mean, geez, what a rude show. Hi, how you doing?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. A little under the weather today, but hey, that's welcome to 57 years old. You know, what can I say?
Oh, my goodness.
Some days are better than others, you know?
Ready for the glue farm. I guess that's the answer, isn't it? Never mind.
I could be.
You know, you don't sound 57 years old, sir. I had you pegged for much younger.
Well.
Oh, listen to who's looking for ratings here. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. Okay. Wait till I get a present from you. I'll know what the reason
was. That was a positive affirmation there, okay?
Right.
Let me raise my hand to you there.
Nick,
very good.
Yeah,
very good.
Nick has had a number of those over the years. He's used ointment on most of them. They got rid of them that way.
Bag balm.
Don't even start. Don't even start. For those of you who have never been on a farm, that really is a product called bag balm, and it is made for dairy cattle. It is for their little milk-producing area and udders. And I'm not going to play any further with that. Not the mood I'm in today.
It's good stuff. I'm here to tell you.
I really do think that every kid, we should pull every single kid out of the suburbs and put them all on buses and make them spend a week on the farm. They need to chase chickens around. They need to clean stables. They need to do all the fun stuff, and it will make them talk about giving them a sense of appreciation for animals and everything else that we've been talking about. And I remember when I was a little tot, you know, and it was to go help Grandpa on the farm. I mean, you learn real quick, you know. That's why, you know, it's stay in school, kids. But, you know, those of us who really like it, really like it. You're either got the – seems like people either have the agricultural gene in them or they don't. I don't know.
Well – you know, I have a somewhat modified idea about that, and that is that we shouldn't make them spend a week on the farm. What we should do is tell them that they will be allowed to spend a week on the farm. The ones who go will come back with all sorts of interesting stories, and the ones who didn't go will definitely go next year. It works better that way, I think, especially nowadays, man. Kids are
just a little bit of humor I want to interject on that. You first have to spend a week dealing with their separation anxiety from their telephone before they'd be able to leave.
Well, yeah, that's probably true. hey, let's just back up for a second. Did you get a chance
I actually, before, well, hold on. This is like
what?
A traffic circle. I have a thought on this telephone thing. I went and got my hair cut the other day, and
on
it was great. Yeah, I'm surprised they don't do that, but I was at Great Clips, and there's about, you know, three, I don't know how many, like maybe like a half dozen of us there. It's all a bunch of guys, and literally everyone is staring into their phone with their head down in their phone, and I'm just thinking, what are y'all looking at? Like, is everyone just going through their Facebook and going over and over and over and over? You know, I said, this is creeping me out. I'm going to put my phone in my pocket. I'm going to stare off into the ozone and actually have my own independent thought, and I thought, wait a second, all this time that we are waiting for things in life, instead of being in your phone, have your own thoughts, because if you're in your phone, you are letting someone else give you the stimuli, and you're responding to someone else's created stimulation, and which, Terry, I'll leave you to make jokes with that statement, but I think it's really true, and I think that we are really becoming slaves to these things, and I thought, man, if I had been frozen in ice in 1985 and someone brought me, or like Back to the Future, and you saw all of us walking around like brain-dead zombies responding to whoever wrote whatever article we're clicking on because it says something about Donald or Hillary, good Lord. You know, and instead, what I noticed and observed was the stylist was cutting this kid's hair, and the kid had some sort of, I don't know if he had chicken pox or some sort of something on his forehead that he was all embarrassed about, and he was upset because his daddy said to the girl, you know, cut his hair this short and this way, and he wanted to leave his hair long because he was embarrassed about whatever, and the kid looked about 8-9 years old, and then his brother was there, and you know, this kid was just having a fit, and all the other stylists who were there cutting hair, they all honed in on what was going on, and I can tell you that all the rest of the people waiting in line to get their hair cut in their phone had no clue at all. So now, let's move it over to this. We think we're so smart, and we're going to say, if you see something, say something, and everyone walking around, everyone's got a run gun pistol in their pocket in case a bad guy comes, but who in the world is going to be able to identify the bad guy when we're not paying attention to our surroundings because we're stuck in our dadgum phone? Tell me that one.
Well, as I was starting to say before, I was going to ask our caller what he thought of the song, and if he had ever heard that song before. Admittedly, it's pretty tough to tell over the speakers that we are listening to on these phones.
Say that again. I'm sorry. My phone chopped out about 3 seconds.
Oh, boy. How prophetic
is that?
There's
some days you know you're on the stairway to heaven, but it feels like the highway to hell.
Yeah, something like that. Well, let's try this again. I remember you told me your name was Bill last week, so I'll go by that name.
That's correct.
And you use that. But what did you think about that song, by them? Boy, Nick has really got me flubbered here, I'll tell you. That monologue of his was just dangerous. So how did you like that song, or could you not tell from the crummy speakers?
Well, I felt that ELO influence. And
it was actually the other way around. The move came before ELO.
Right, right. What I mean is that the evolution that became ELO, I hear the foundation there. And sadly, I didn't really get turned on until about halfway through the intermission.
Listen to that. Pull that song up on something and listen to it. Listen to the original version of Do Ya by The Move, M-O-V-E. Anyhow, moving rapidly onward, let's have just a couple more words about the possibilities with animals and our relationship with them. Humane Society of the United States, which is headed by Wayne Pacelli, truly one of the most reprehensible, demented individuals I think I've ever listened to, a man who probably couldn't create logic out of a book that had theorems in it. It is really sad what they are doing to people. It is really sad the impact that they're having on people. It is really sad that now SeaWorld, I used to have a great deal of respect for their director because he basically stood up and gave a middle finger to HSUS about the whole whale thing, and eventually he caves in and then has Wayne Pacelli come out to the facility so that they can make amends. I mean, Wayne Pacelli should have been lunch for one of the orcas. That would have been a service. That truly would have been a service to mankind and other animals. This is phenomenal, what has transpired with these groups. They are some of the most misbegotten liars. And, you know, it's not the poor people who are out there getting suckered out of their money by these folks. It's the people who run these outfits and the people, the famous people who support them, like good old Ellen DeGeneres. I'm sorry, I mispronounced that, I guess. It's amazing to me that these famous people get taken in by these nutball groups. The gentleman who used to host The Price is Right was an avid supporter of PETA and some of these other nutball groups. And they carry the world with them on their skewed journey into the never world of make-believe. Folks, if you have animals, treat them well. If you want to understand more about the earth and its surroundings, look at the animals. Appreciate them for what they are to you and what they are to the planet. Yes, some of them we do eat. Yes, some of them we appreciate just by looking at. Some of them are our pets. Some of them are companions. Some of them are family members and all the rest of it. But just do the right thing by the animals. But understand that we have this relationship. Some of them help us with our work. Many of the animals were bred specifically for that. Take that away from them and you're taking their lives away.
So, I've got a little story that I think you guys would really enjoy. Go ahead and finish what you're saying. I just wanted to interject.
I'm finished with my monologue there. So.
To give you an idea of the balance of nature and how important it is, when I lived in West Palm Beach, Florida, there was this cat doing their business in my driveway, which was basically a dirt driveway at that time. My entrance was on the back of the home. It was in an alleyway. So every time I'd run over that on my way to work, you know, I'd have a problem smelling it, you know, and all this. And what happened was we had lizards everywhere, geckos everywhere, and cats everywhere, okay? And I made a mistake of shooing the cats off, you know, spraying them with the hose every time they do their business in the driveway. Well, what did that lead to? All of a sudden, since the cats left and they didn't want to get sprayed with the hose, the rats took over and ate the lizards. Guess what I had now? I had insects and rats instead of cats and lizards. And that's just how delicate the balance is. Had I left everything alone, it would have been fine.
I think that you may be misguided there. The rats are not fast enough to get the geckos in most instances. They can get the babies. The cats actually eat more geckos than any other animal on earth. Cats devour just about anything that's live. I shouldn't say devour, they kill. We've disconnected, and we've talked about this many times, we've disconnected the food response from the kill response in cats. In other words, their hunger has nothing to do with killing. And we did that centuries ago because we wanted animals that would kill the mice and the rats and the barnyard and the houses and so forth. Unfortunately, that has carried over now. Cats are still nonstop killers. And unfortunately, all the small animals are feeling the pain of that. We've lost, we have fewer than 40% of our original songbirds left in the United States, and the cats are a major reason for that.
I know Australia has a real problem with feral domestic cats.
Yeah, well, we have just
problem.
A bigger problem. They have a bigger problem with the foxes, and they have an even bigger problem with the cane toads that are over there and the rabbits. All introduced animals, and each one throwing the balance out, severely throwing the balance out. You've got to understand there are repercussions. Hey, Maestro, let's throw that record on one more time. Boy, I'm dating myself, throwing it a record.
You want me to put the song on again?
Yeah, come on.
You want me to on vinyl? I can only do it digitally, though.
Mercy,
all right, let's go.
Are we gonna put the song on? Okay.
Yeah, I was gonna. That's how I was doing. Is everybody ready?
Okay.
All right.
Whoa. Ready.
Yeah. Ready.
Hi.
There sure are some elements of that that has gone over multi-genre.
Mm-hmm. I'll be honest.
Almost a rap in there, basically. What year did that hit the streets?
I believe 67, if I'm not mistaken.
I got you.
Well,
yeah, it's definitely British.
Listen,
no doubt about
listen,
that.
Listen to it on some clean speakers at some point. I'm sorry. Go ahead, please, Caller.
I just need to listen to the lyrics, too. It was hard for me to get the lyrics. But, you know, I thought that ELO did that song originally, but what I heard is the second production of that song, according to what you said earlier. Would that be correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Yep, that would be correct. And
it was
sissied up quite a bit by ELO.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the original by The Move is really a gutsy, very powerful song. And if you again,
mm-hmm.
if you listen to the lyrics and listen carefully, there's some great poetry in there. I know you're a fan of poetry from things you've told us.
Yes.
There is some very wonderful imagery in that song that I've rarely heard in other songs. And it's really high-end, powerful imagery. So,
yeah, and I was checking out the phrasing too. Want my love. There's a space there, and love comes in on beat one, whereas ELO did it on the and before. There's just that landing on one is something I tell so many people. One comes late in the song. Don't push to one. Let one arrive and hit it. And beat one is what I'm talking about. You know, it's one,
mm-hmm.
two, three, four, one. It's that late down the road. And they were emphasizing that, which is good. I actually like that chorus better than the way Jeff Lynne and company did it later. Seriously.
As I said, listen to it on some good clean speakers and crank it up a bit. That's not a quiet song. And you know, as I said, for my money, that's one of the best songs that ever came out of any era. It was an amazing, well-done song. It's one of those once-in-a-lifetime jobs. And there's a bit of history behind the song, which I won't go into right now. But anyhow.
Well, we're out of time anyways. But you know what? Y'all
are
the best to end this on music nerd stuff. We need more music nerds, less nerds stuck in their phone. Learn music. If anybody out there doesn't know how to play music, learn. Ask someone. Someone will teach you. Start with the G chord. Play Dixieland Delight till you're blue in the face. I don't care. Whatever. Something. Row, row, row your boat. But do something with music. It's good for the soul.
Yeah, I have a lady trying to pick up guitar, and the first thing I told her, I said, don't worry about the chords. Learn the scales.
Mm-hmm.
And got her doing a 3-octave scale now and doing it in a way where she's actually picking up speeds and she's getting used to the fingerboard. So everything is relative, but, you know, every guitar solo is based around those interval scales. And it's just a combination of different notes. That's all there is to it. So, you know, once you learn that.
We're done for now. We're running over, but.
We're over time, but, yeah, we're done for now. But
yeah,
listen,
nobody,
y'all, we'll be back next week.
Can hear us, but one
good night
thing
next
that
week.
Was,
have a happy 4th of July. Happy
yeah.
Yay. We never talked about it. But
we never talked about it, yeah. Boy, we lost
sunscreen,
that one.
Sunscreen and be safe.
Sunscreen
yeah, right.
and be safe, exactly. So, all right, see y'all later. Bye-bye.
All right.
I'm going
thanks,
out.
Everyone.
Bye.
Bye-bye.